bringing Lance, bringing Kyle, bringing me. You want to talk about creating an edge, having some intent and some fire to the guys who take the ball. You're definitely doing that, and I think you guys, if you followed me at all, you definitely have probably seen that, and if you haven't, then you'll see it very soon.
And welcome into the best podcast in baseball. It is brought to you by Closets by Design, and you might be wondering why the really loud guy that you're not used to is doing the introduction and welcoming you in. That's because I'm helping my good buddy Derek Gould out. I'm Kevin Wheeler from KMOX. Of course, Derek is here, but just like last week, Derek, you need a little help on the voice front. And
Lord knows
if anyone needs someone to help speak, I'm the one with the words. Both I have the volume. I have the volume in terms of the numbers of words and the volume in terms of the audio volume as well. Thanks for the introduction. I'm glad to help out with as many words as I can. It's good to see you, buddy.
Yeah, it's good. And, you know, volume is kind of the theme of the offseason for the Cardinals. It's the word that John Mozeliak used about what they wanted to acquire. You know, they wanted to acquire a volume of innings. It also probably describes the reaction from fans on social media. There's some volume of opinions there. And there's probably a volume of angst if they don't continue adding. So we'll see. You know, volume definitely the story of the winter so far. So it's nice to bring you aboard to add to the volume.
Glad to help out, man. You know, I love joining, you know, in the more traditional guest role, but I'm happy to carry more of the word load since you got a little scratch going on there. You've been dealing with a little dry throat. Is that what that is?
No, it's just I don't know what it is. It really hasn't really come back since the GM meeting. So maybe it's just like the hot stove funk or something like that. But lost it completely, but it's coming back. It's just it just doesn't have any stamina.
You got a little smoker's voice going just a little bit.
Yeah. We'll see how long it lasts.
Good.
Some coffee here, some water here, so we'll see.
Well, I'm happy to be your Sherpa, and again, always glad to be a guest on the best podcast in baseball, because I really do think it is the best podcast in baseball. All right, we got a lot to do. I know later on we're going to nerd out about catchers, obviously a lot about this week. It's been a busy week. I've really been a busy 2-3 weeks for the Cardinals. I mean, they've gotten a lot of the big work done early, but this week, though, the big move for the guy that can be considered a front end of the rotation guy in Sonny Gray. I know that you had written a lot about him. A lot of folks had made that kind of connected the dots. I was worried about Atlanta swooping in and, you know, having a lot of the similar things to offer the Cardinals do, proximity to Nashville, things along those lines, but also a team that's coming off a 100-win season. But he chose St. Louis.
Yeah, and in his press conference, you know, he really kind of outlined the reason. In fact, you know what, Kevin, rather than us talk about it, why don't we let him talk about it?
That was really good play.
You know, he was introduced to the press conference, and then he said, you know what, I don't have anything prepared. And then he spoke for 3 minutes and 9 seconds. Great. So why not just play that for folks? They can hear it straight from Sonny Gray about what the Cardinals offered him in addition to the chance to be their first $100 million free agent pitcher.
I don't have anything prepared or anything, but I mean, Mo's right. Going into this thing, I wanted to be a Cardinal. That started probably a little over a year ago. It's a place that every time I've come here as a visitor, I've looked at the stadium and I've said, wow, this place is incredible. I looked around the seats and I've seen the fans, and the fans continue to show up and they support this team. And then you talk around the league and you talk around different guys who have been all over the place, and everybody raves about St. Louis, the Cardinals, the fans, how the fans support you, how the fans are hard on you, how the fans expect you to win, expect greatness, which is something that, as a player, as a competitor, that's something that you want, especially for me. Where I am in my career is is I want to win. I want to win. Coming to an organization like St. Louis, the tradition, just walking in here this morning, you're kind of walking around and you're seeing everything and you see the history right when you walk in, going into the clubhouse. The history's there. The feel is there. It's just a baseball town and a baseball city and a place that I'm thrilled to be able to come and be a part of it. I think that as Mo was saying, pitching. Pitching is something that I love to do. Winning is something that I love to do. Creating a pitching culture, working with other pitchers on a staff, pushing each individual pitcher on a staff to get better. That's something that I truly, truly enjoy. You want to talk about changing a pitching culture or creating and establishing a strong pitching culture. I think you bringing Lance, bringing Kyle, bringing me. You want to talk about creating an edge, having some intent and some fire to the guys who take the ball. You're definitely doing that, and I think you guys, if you followed me at all, you definitely have probably seen that, and if you haven't, then you'll see it very soon. But you want to talk about someone who takes the ball and has an edge, you'll see it. And that's it. Like I said, I do want to thank everyone involved throughout this process. It's a place that me and my family, we truly, truly wanted to be here, and we're glad that it worked out, and we get to be here. So, very, very excited to be a Cardinal, and very excited to get this thing started. So, anybody have any questions?
All right, so Sonny Gray's an obvious upgrade. He fills a really important need, and I know we're going to talk a lot more about on the field than off in this, or at least I think we are. But certainly finishing second in the Cy Young Award voting in the American League is a sign of where he ranked in 2023. And certainly the hope would be he can repeat that or something close to it again in 24, 25, 26. I also thought, Derek, in listening to him at his press conference, that his vocal presence is going to matter a lot as well. I mean, when you lose Adam Wainwright, clearly last year wasn't Adam Wainwright on the mound the way that he had been prior to that. Last year was blah. But he was still, honestly, I think he was still, in terms of people in uniform, the voice of the Cardinals. You know, he's not John Rooney. He's not the voice of the Cardinals, but he's still the go-to guy. He was still a very fun and thoughtful speaker, someone that fans could really identify with. And I think in addition to being a great pitcher, I think Sonny can take up some of that, and I do think that's important.
Yeah, and, you know, some of it was Adam wasn't around. Remember, he was on the injury list.
Right,
and not only was he on the injury list, but he was on the injury list at a rather tumultuous and turbulent time for the Cardinals. He came back just really on the eve of them saying that Contreras wasn't going to catch for a bit, and that played into it. You know, he came back and wasn't able to provide the quality innings at a time when – no one really was. And that was part of the biggest crater that the Cardinals just could not come out of. So, you know, I don't think, I mean, I know it's not a coincidence that the Cardinals looked at this offseason as a chance to add somebody like Sonny Gray. And at the same time, they worked ahead of that to add somebody like Lance Lynn and add Kyle Gibson. These are guys who not only bring innings, but man, they are going to be vocal. And they are going to be leaders, and they're definitely going to play off of each other in a way that has in the past been celebrated by the Cardinals as their team within a team. You know, the kind of Chris Carpenter setup rotation. You know, they got three of those guys, and they think their personalities are going to mesh. There's really no reason to think they won't either, because of what we know about Sonny Gray as an opponent to the Cardinals. As a pitcher, you know, talking to him through the years with Cincinnati, whatever, you know, just you hear about what he is like in the clubhouse, and he's going to fit right in, and they knew that, and he's going to be a guy who can lead a rotation. You know, Kyle Gibson and Lance Lynn, this will be the third team that they've been teammates on You know, they play off of each other. They're not the same guy. Lance Lynn will definitely call out the nonsense. He will definitely point that out in peers. Might rub some of them the wrong way because of his bluntness and honesty and him skewering them, but it'll be with a reason. It won't be because someone hasn't earned it. And, you know, Kyle Gibson talked about that a little bit, that Lance is a guy who will get in their face, and then, you know, Kyle will be somebody who supports him. And so, you know, creating that culture was such a big part of, you know, Sonny Gray's answer, as you heard. I wanted to ask you, do you think he finished second in the American League Cy Young to a unanimous selection in Gerrit Cole of the Yankees?
Mm-hmm.
Kevin, do you think he's an ace? Is Sonny Gray an ace? Has Sonny Gray become in his early 30s an ace?
I guess a lot of it depends on how you define that term, right? I mean, can he be a playoff team's number one starter? Yeah, he was last year. I mean, he was Minnesota's number one starter. So can he be that? Yeah. I mean, ace, that's Gerrit Cole, right? That's, you know, peak Clayton Kershaw. That's peak Adam Wainwright. I don't know if he's that.
Well, then who is? Like, maybe the answer is nobody but Gerrit Cole is?
Well, I mean, no.
Sandy Alcantara is.
When he's healthy, yeah. I think, and this is the thing.
Is Sonny Gray Zach Gallen?
Just I'd say that he's an older Zach Gallen is probably a good way to look at it. I think Zach Gallen pitched like a number one starter last year. Is he an ace? I don't know. I think, again, it really is dependent upon how you define it. Do you define ace as, you know, Bob Gibson, essentially, you know, the stopper, the one that's always going to be good? Yeah, I mean, there's like three of those guys, five of those guys maybe in a given time.
I mean, Christy Mathewson is my ace, man. That's the standard. Meet that, you know.
I agree. But I think that, yeah, he can be the number one starter for a playoff team. What we don't have yet, though, is can he be the number one starter? Can he be the dude in the playoffs? Can he be the guy that is your best pitcher, and that's enough to be, not him by himself, but that's enough for your staff to be a World Series winner? That's what we got to find out, because, and I think that, you know, when we're looking at the totality of the Cardinals' moves, that's my worry. They're clearly better than they were last year. That they should be a lot more stable, right? I mean, you know, Lynn and Gibson are not going to go out there and win an ERA title. They're not going to go out there and be Cy Young contenders. But you know they're going to pitch every 5 days. You know that they're going to at least be competitive. I don't think Lynn's going to be as bad as he was last year, even though last year scares the hell out of me. Because of age. If last year happened when he was 32, I wouldn't be worried about age 33. But, you know, we all just, maybe this is just the remnants of what we saw with Adam Wainwright, but we've seen how fast it can go. Now, Lynn is a good bit younger still than Waino was last year, right? 37. So, you know, 3 or 4 years younger, but we all know that there's no such thing as a guaranteed aging curve. Sometimes it's 36, 37, sometimes it's 40, sometimes it's 32. You know, everybody ages differently. So the age is the scary part to me when you look at last year. Is that a permanent change or is it fixable? And they think it's fixable. I'm sure he thinks it's fixable, and we'll find out. But, you know, he's going to start every fifth day. You know that he's not going to be in and out of the rotation as a general rule. And a lot of the guys that were in there last year, the guys that these guys are replacing, you know, Jack Flaherty, you never knew what you're getting. Right. You could get seven strong innings, but then if you got that, the next 3 or 4 starts were not going to be that. They were going to be weird. They were going to be short. They were going to be ugly. And, you know, if you can replace Jack Flaherty with stability, if you can replace Adam Wainwright with 180 innings and a 450 ERA, that's a big difference in that particular rotation spot, right? What does that change? That probably changes the outcome of 5 to 8 games.
Well, it changes so much because it changes how the bullpen can be used, right? Like,
yes.
It's an example that I've given before, but you think back to the series at Coors Field early in the year, right? And they unloaded the bullpen. They had Pittsburgh coming up on the home schedule, right? But in Colorado, they had a chance to win that series. It's Coors Field. It tests a pitching staff. And so the Cardinals were very aggressive. Oli Marmol, Dusty Blake, they were very aggressive with the use of the relievers to win that series, to close that final day down. One of the reasons why was because they saw who they had coming up
right in
the rotation for against Pittsburgh. And what happened? The whole thing kind of fell apart. They were very aggressive with the bullpen. They counted on having one of their reliable starters provide at least a quality start. Didn't happen. Mad scramble. Just a mad scramble from there to cover innings. And how many times did we see that, Kevin? It was constant. And
yeah,
if you have after a game, say at Dodger Stadium early in the next season or at Cincinnati where things can go bonkers in their pinball game, you know, those games, you can unload the bullpen because you go, well, Kyle Gibson's starting that next start, that first part of that next series. So unload the bullpen to win now, count on Kyle Gibson to provide a quality start, and then move on. It's the way to win series to series. We don't know what it does in the playoffs. As you say, that's a great
right,
point.
Right.
But series to series, stable innings is what makes a contender.
Yeah, and look, we know the offseason's not done. I saw what Bernie Miklas wrote yesterday on Scoops with Danny Mac, and I think he made a really good point. Like, I do think a lot of fans have expectations that are beyond reality. I mean, I don't see, even with, and we should talk about the structure of Sonny Gray's contract too, because that does give a little bit more flexibility for the now with some trade-off for the later, but it's after a whole bunch of other contracts are going to be expiring. So you still have flexibility there. But Sonny Gray is going to get paid $10 million this year, $25 million next year, $26 million in year three. I'm sorry, $35 million in year three. And then obviously we've got the buyout and or fourth year, all of that stuff that's tied into the contract. But for now, it's only $10 million for 2024 for Sonny Gray, which gives you some room to move that we didn't necessarily know they were going to have when you see a $25 million AAV. And I assume, like a lot of people, I know you don't assume because you're smart and you're a reporter and I'm a talk show guy and I can assume all I want. But I assumed it was just going to be 25 a year. And all right, fine, they could afford that. But I don't think that, I mean, you can tell me if you think I'm wrong, Derek, but I just don't see this team going from now and adding another salary. I don't see them going and getting another $25 million pitcher. I know everybody wants Yamamoto. I think that would be a brilliant move. He's 25. Mm-hmm. I don't see that on top of this. I do see the possibility of a trade for another guy, but as we just talked about the pen, that's got to be a huge priority right now. I mean, they need two real relievers, not just guys that could be good, not just guys that have a characteristic that you like. They need two real proven late inning guys, because right now I don't think you have anybody that you could absolutely count on in that bullpen. Wow. I think you have one that is as talented as anybody. If Ryan Helsley is healthy and available, he's amazing. After that, you have nothing but questions, because Gallegos is a question after last year. We have not seen enough of Jojo Romero to think that he is a guarantee. He's got great stuff. I'm looking forward to see what he can do, but he's not a yes. He's not an automatic. Palante is not a yes. He's not an automatic. He's a talented guy who's going to be here, but I can't say that he's a seventh or eighth inning guy right now. They need two people that are better than everyone else they have outside of Helsley.
Their opinion is that they need one at least. So they're in a line with you, as you know, in their sense that they need one. You know, the $10 million contract that Sonny Gray, or the $10 million salary that Sonny Gray has for the coming year, very similar to what they did with Wilson Contreras. Had a smaller salary this past year. It goes up considerably from here. That was in part because the Cardinals were still kind of looking at their finances, but also because they didn't have as much of a rebate this past year as they did in other years with Nolan Arenado's contract. This past year was one where they had to shoulder so much, had to really pay the bulk of it, or all of it. This coming year, the Rockies take on some of it. You know, at the moment, the Cardinals are right around, say, $170 million, depending on who you think is on the 26-man roster. And again, I'm talking only 26-man opening day roster.
Right, right.
Not the 40-man roster, which is obviously more expensive and what the team kind of goes with. But if you look just at that, they still have some room to even, whether you look at the 26-man or the 40-man, they still have some financial room to get back to where they were headed last year, not where they ultimately landed, but where they were headed, which was slightly above $200 million. That's still kind of the expectation, is that they'll get close to / beyond $200 million for the total 40-man spending for the first time. And to do that, you know, you I mean, if there's a $10 million reliever out there, they can do that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the kind of guy you're talking about, right?
Yes. I think so. And again, I know that there are a lot of guys out there. Maybe you can wait it out and see, but I don't think that this is, you know, well, we like the characteristics of this pitch, but he had a 4 ERA last year. I would argue too, but I'll accept one that is better than everyone else you have aside from Helsley. Helsley's performance ability is not a question. It's just availability can be the question, and that can be related to both health and just comfort, I guess.
Yeah.
With being willing to go back-to-back days, although we did see some of that after he got healthy late in the year. We did see a little bit more of it than I thought we would coming off the injured list.
It'll be real interesting because the Cardinals, you know, and Helsley, they kind of wonder if that 200th win from Adam was a bit of a breakthrough for all of them. Not just for Adam, but, you know, Ryan saying, I want this. I want to be the one who closes out this 1-0 win for this guy.
Right.
Well, you've pitched a lot recently. I want this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the feeling and the purpose of closing out a game that meant everything to one guy, and because of that, everything to the team, going nowhere. I think that was a, we'll see if that has carryover, but it is the only time really last year that you had any sense that, like, okay, this is a shutdown game akin to a playoff against the division title or the division winning Brewers, you know, was if there was a moment for him to go, look, this is it. I'm doing this and I'm doing it for another night in a row. I'm doing it for whatever the third time it was in 5 days. I think it was, you know, and to pitch like he did. And not have hesitation. That's significant.
So, one more pitching thing that I have on my mind, and I've been kicking it around because clearly, if all goes according to plan, and we know that that's not always the case in spring training. A lot of weird things can happen. Especially, I joke about it all the time. If there's ever news at the very beginning of camp, it's always bad news. There's no really like big good news when pitchers and catchers report. It's always somebody's hurt. Or somebody's on a slower schedule and we're going to ease them in or whatever. But barring all of that and barring a trade that we can't predict right now, because, again, it would be brilliant if you were to find a way to add another guy. And, look, maybe it means you trade Steven Matz, which I think could be done. That contract can't be too prohibitive when you're looking at what Gibson and Lynn got. I think Matz, you're not going to get a huge return, but I think somebody would take the contract. And
I mean, you're part of a huge return. That's the idea.
That's right.
Why it comes on.
Correct. And I think that they could still improve the rotation if they choose to do it via the trade route. And it's just hard to figure out where that would go at the moment. So I don't want to get too deep into that, although we know it's possible and I would definitely hope for it. Like most fans would, but what about the young guys who are clearly not in the plan for the rotation now? And I'm fine with this, by the way. This is not a criticism, but obviously you've got Zach Thompson, who showed well at the end of last year. You've got Matthew Liberatore, who hasn't shown what you need to see from a major league starter, but he has shown flashes in the bullpen that, okay, maybe that's just a different way to look at it. How do you handle those two in particular, or any other young guy that makes a push in the spring? I mean, are they candidates to help out in the bullpen? Do you keep some? You got to pick one, right? That's going to be your sixth starter in Memphis. You got to have one person that's kind of ready to jump in if you need them to and go get six innings. Or do you not? Can you just say, look, we want our 13 best pitchers, and that's what we're taking north with us?
They'll probably have one guy or two guys. They'll probably have two guys in Memphis who are that, you know, kind of on turn as that shadow rotation, right? That makes a lot of sense to do. And they can, because remember they have Drew Rahm and Klopfenstein and the guys that they,
you
know, reversing who they acquired at the trade deadline. So they have guys who at the moment would slot in there.
Right. Graceffo too, maybe McGreevy. I mean, there are a lot of guys getting close.
McGreevy. Yeah. I think Graceffo and McGreevy would be pitching to, force their way,
right, know, to develop, like, yeah,
to not just be there to be available and give innings in the majors, but to like push their way to be part of the conversation, either for the bullpen or for starts in the major. I mean, the Cardinals have, and to their credit, you know, and this may factor in if they continue to look for, you know, a trade for a starter, is, all right, if you get 12 starts from Zach Thompson and 20 starts from somebody else, that's pretty good. If that 20 starts guy is, you know, is a top kind of guy.
Let's say that's Steven Matz.
Right, exactly. That's it. Or, you know, like the other example from outside would be Tyler Glasnow.
Sure. Right? Yeah.
If you acquire him and there's, you know, there's some risk, there's some volatility, how many starts is he going to get? You know, maybe they're encouraged that in a walk year and another year removed from injury, you know, the acquiring team for Tyler Glasnow is like, well, we're going to get 30 starts. But can you bank on that?
Because no, but you need to have a guy like that for the playoffs.
You do. You need.
I mean,
to have
I don't care
like
about
that.
30 starts from that guy. I want to get him healthy for the playoffs because I think he and Sonny Gray at the top can be that formidable match that you need to win a playoff series.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Michaelis as a third would not.
Or whoever's not, pitching best, right?
Yeah. Right. But I mean, not too bad.
Right. Right.
Yeah. No. And then that's where they're at. So, you know, you think of it as an aggregate spot, right? Like that's the thinking is that you have Zach Thompson who could, you know, make 15 to 20 starts for a contending team. And it's how, where do those other 12 come from? Cause you're not relying on him to the make 30 starts.
Right.
And that's a big change.
Is it time to give it a full run with Liberatore in the bullpen? Cause I know he's young. Like this is not about giving up. Okay. This
Boy,
is about...
it sure seems that way, doesn't it? I mean, were you intrigued? Were you
as
intrigued as the team became? I found the tale of the two lefties so fascinating as they, you know, Zach Thompson and Spring
going opposite ways on the highway. Yeah.
Yeah. They met at the crossroads and they went in the different direction than the team expected. I kind of love that. Like, I kind of like the fact that, like, you know, Zach Thompson wins a spot in the bullpen out of the spring training. You know, a few weeks in, all of a sudden they're like, yeah, we need him as a starter. So we're really going to have him focus on 2024. Then it's like, no, we need him as a reliever. And man, Matthew Liberatore really making strides as a starter, goes into Tampa Bay, authors the game of his life. Just really impressive, but can't sustain that. They need a starter. They go, well, Zach Thompson, here we go. Maybe we'll try that. and then he does really well. And all of a sudden you got the need in the bullpen. And Matthew Liberatore goes in there like, well, we'll figure it out. You know, we'll see what it does. We'll see if it gets going. And it does. It works. And they just like completely, it was like a classic Freaky Friday episode. They just swapped bodies unexpectedly.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I'm not trying to make a judgment about Liberatore as a pitcher. Like, if he was pitching for a team that wasn't facing the urgency that the Cardinals are, not just from the outside, but internally too, I'd want to keep developing him. And, you know, a 23-year-old starting pitcher with a lot of upside is a worthy developmental project. But I think the Cardinals are in a spot. They need guys to contribute in 2024. And when you look at Liberatore so far in the major leagues as a starter, we've only seen what you'd want to see from him basically one time. But the command of the fastball is a problem. I think that the number of weapons is a problem right now. All I see is fastball, breaking ball. I don't see anything else or another variation of the breaking ball or fastball that seems to be a legitimate weapon for somebody. I think he can go one time through an order right now really well because he can. If you give him the shorter stint, the fastball plays up, which we saw. And we also saw that he had a hard time having that fastball play up as a starter, like carrying it. He did that one time and it was amazing against Tampa Bay. And that's what you're looking for. That's what you dream about. But does this team right now need the guy that can go throw 96 with a big swing and miss breaking ball for 5-6 batters in a game, as opposed to a guy that might not be good by the time he gets to the fifth inning as a starter?
Why did teams stop developing starters out of the bullpen? Was it just so long ago that Adam Wainwright spent a year in the bullpen, that Lance Lynn spent time in the bullpen, that that these future starters spent time in the bullpen and then emerged by developing that way? I mean,
I have a theory about that if you want to hear a 30-second theory.
Sure.
It's because those two guys and pitchers in general at that time were developed and were pitching real starting pitchers innings as they were coming up the ranks. But when you look at how pitchers are developed now, they're all on pitch counts. They're all 3-4 innings a start. Well, if you're going to let them pitch in the pen early, they're never going to build up their innings load. They're never going to learn how to go 150, 180, 200 innings because they're never getting the chance to, and they're being limited. Look at Tink Hentz. When is he ever going to be able to shoulder a starter's load in the major leagues?
Yeah, he's going to be a five.
He's not even close.
Yeah, with the way they're developed. But maybe Libertor's different. I mean, he throws every day.
Right.
The big guy. He what does he call him? He's like ever ready. You know, he throws every day. You know, he's a high, what do they call that? A high throw. I can't remember the phrase that he used, but he throws a lot. Even when he's a starter, he throws between games a lot. So maybe he's that, maybe that would benefit him. Maybe he's the guy who benefits from it because he's done pretty good workload in the mind. He's still really young. You know, maybe what he needs is the major league experience, not the starting experience.
I would agree. I don't see any problem with that. And you know, look, so what? What if he's just a guy that's like Josh Hader? Josh Hader has amazing
stuff. Well, that'd be pretty good. I mean,
no. But I mean, I don't mean that good. That's crazy to think that you'd want someone to be that good. You hope for it, but you would never bet on it or guess at it. But I mean, Hader has phenomenal stuff. There's a reason he's not starting. Because I know some of it was health related when he was coming up in the minor leagues, but he was not able to sustain that for 5, 6, 7 innings. So you turned him into a weapon where he doesn't have to. He can just come in,
right?
And looking at Libertor at the younger side of Hader, where he was that 5-out, 6-out, 7-out guy anywhere from the 5th or 6th inning on. To shut out, you know, to shut down a rally and then continue and just dominate. The thing is that I think some teams, and I'm not really picking on the Cardinals here. I think this is a broader thing. A lot of teams are just too slow to finally maximize at the major league level the talent they have in the minor leagues. At some point, you need them to help you in the major leagues. A third year in Memphis is not going to get Matthew Libertor where he needs to be, and it's not going to help the team.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's the thing. He needs major league experience. I mean, they probably need to know now what he can be. And for this team, what he can be is that maybe that developing answer out of the bullpen. You know, maybe he's a swing guy. Maybe he's more than that.
Yep.
Maybe he's an innings guy, which because he can throw every day. Maybe that's the answer to help, you know, further stabilize the
innings. Put him on the Waino plan, right?
Maybe he makes something more. Yeah, that's the thing. Maybe he makes something more of himself, you know?
Right. I don't know. I think that's an interesting thing when we're talking about building out the bullpen and how you're going to – because what they need are elite arms, Derek, right? I mean, I'm not really picking on a guy, but, I mean, John King's not going to change your team.
No, they need swing and miss stuff, and they've said as much. And they need guys that, because they have innings coming from the rotation, can shorten games without having to shoulder the big workload. I mean, they have that potential now, so go make it happen.
Yep, and I think that some of that has to be, quote, proven coming out of free agency or a trade. And let's – I know we got to do some catching stuff too, but real quick, how much does – roster cleanup play into what you can add, either starting, pitching, or bullpen? I mean, does Tyler O'Neill get you a bullpen guy that is the kind that we're talking about?
Maybe.
Does some combination of Tyler O'Neill and a minor league pitcher or somebody get you that kind of guy?
Maybe. Yeah, or Tyler O'Neill just might get you that kind of guy. I mean, you're talking about, you know, he might get you a guy where it's a mutual risk trade, right? You know, there's upside on both sides, and there's health, you know, history on both sides. Dylan Carlson might do one of those relievers. From you know, the Yankees are a team that's of interest that I've written about before. You know, maybe there's a reliever there. The Cardinals might want. So yeah, there's options there.
Is it? I don't like to do this to you because you're a reporter, you're not a guesser, but I'll do the guessing part. It seems like there's almost zero chance that Tyler O'Neill is on this team next year. And I think the chances for Dylan Carlson are greater than that.
Yes.
Simply because you don't have to pay him $5, $6 million if he's going to be your fourth outfielder.
And you need a
center
fielder.
But I feel like that's 50-50 at best, too.
Well, I think it's more than that because I think it's better than that for him sticking around because you need a center fielder. And who's your shortstop if Mason Wynn doesn't have
a good
spring?
No, you're right. You're right. That's Tommy Edman.
Yeah, so it's Tommy Edman. So you need a center fielder. You need
Is that not Lars Nootbaar?
They have said that Lars will be in the corner. You know, okay. So is it Palacios? Is it Santa? You know, I mean, that's my point. Is it Carlson?
Nope, you're good. It's a good point. Yeah, very good point.
All right, what's your opinion of one knee down? Because the Cardinals made a decision with their roster that they didn't have to. They non-tendered Kisner, allowed Andrew Kisner to become a free agent. That clears the way. And I'm going to give you like 40 seconds to talk about this. I know it's a bummer. But maybe we just make a whole podcast about it. But
we can do that.
Kisner goes out, free agent. That clears the way for Evan Herrera, who does have an option left, but he's going to be the backup. And they put Pedro Páez on.
Yep.
Guy who radically changed where he is on the depth chart last spring with his defensive improvement, which was related to going one knee down.
Yeah, I'm a fan of it. I mean, again, at the major league level, these guys are so talented. A lot of the concerns you have at younger levels with being one knee down, they're non-existent, right? These guys have super strong arms. They're super athletic. A lot of them can even still throw with a good pop time from that one knee down. I do think there are situations when you shouldn't be in that position. Runner on third base would be one of them. I don't want to take the chance. I know that you can block from that position, but I don't think you can block with movement as well. You know, if it's a small miss, you're fine. If it's a big miss, you're in trouble. And that's what I worry about with a runner on third. But overall, it helps reduce the workload. It helps you get down at the bottom of the zone and work up into the zone for framing. I don't think there's any reason that anybody should question it at this point. I mean, I think it's a proven fact. It works for the way the game is at this moment.
I'm a big fan of finding ways for individuals to maximize what they can do. And if that's one knee down because of their body type or because of their comfort or because of their arm strength, but that maximizes them defensively, their ability to get the lower strike, that makes a lot of sense to me. Just like, you know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me to ask somebody, why wedge a changeup? You know, why have that, say, why not see what their skills are that maybe allows for them physically or feel or, you know, consistency wise to be, you know, to find effectiveness with something else. Same kind of thing. Like if a hitter doesn't have the body type, doesn't have the swing, doesn't have the success, doesn't have the strength, whatever, to have, you know, to be a monster masher, they can still find a way to contribute, you know, still find a way for that swing to be effective, still find a way to get their, you know, to not make outs. And that's the thing that I've always wondered is like, you know, why vacuum pack catchers into this is the way it has been done when sometimes physically, you know, the gifts allow for a different way to be done. And I guess is catcher all that different? Is it just such a position of such great demands, Kevin, since it's a position that you've played and such great reliance on fundamentals that something that jarring, you know, it's just hard to, you know, like we don't see catchers who catch with their right hand, for example, you know, I mean, is it because that of the nature of that position that even going one knee down sometimes gets people going, no, that's just not, can't be done.
Yeah. I mean, there's that in everything, right? And that position is very difficult to train, assess. I mean, like part of the problem is to get good at it, you got to take a physical beating. And, you know, how do you change that so you can still get training and not injure the guy or beat the crap out of the player as you go? And so people just kind of fall back on what's always been rather than experimenting and going. But the good thing is we're in an analytical age where we are evaluating everything. And thankfully, it's come along on catchers. The left-handed throwing catcher is probably never going to be a thing because, 75% of batters are right-handed. And you don't want your release point to be right near the head of a right-handed batter that might be slightly leaning out. But also, on top of it, it's the throw to third that's the bigger concern, mm-hmm. right? I mean, if you have to make a quick throw to third, it's going to be awfully tough to turn your entire body and make a strong, accurate throw. And you can look at that. Look, some, you can do it. You watch catchers throw to first base, and they're good at it. But the difference is that's an element of surprise play versus, oh, man, the guy's stealing. I need to get this ball down there and on the bag in 1.5 seconds. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a little bit different dynamic because people always ask that. Well, catchers have to throw to first. Yes, but only when they're choosing to.
Yeah, that's not a steal.
Only when the pitch allows for it, only when the situation calls for it, only when you think that guy is doing something that allows you to pick him off. You don't control when somebody tries to steal. So there's a big difference in that regard. So that part certainly wouldn't change, I wouldn't think. But I'm glad the other stuff is, because we just have a better understanding of what you can do. And people are actually measuring this, Derek. I want to be clear, because as somebody that coaches young catchers, we have to understand there's a difference between a kid who's 10 and a major league player. There's a difference between a kid who's 10 and a kid who's 12. And a kid who's 12 versus 14, 14 versus 16, whatever. And everything needs to be done based on the aptitude of the player. So this is not a blanket, hey, everybody, do this all the time with your catchers at all ages. It's an evaluation process. And in the major leagues, these are the most talented catchers on the planet, right? They're most of them are athletic. They may not be fast runners, but they have short distance quickness. They have anticipation. They have years and years of experience to know when something may be happening. And I think all of that lends to making this technique work, even with men on base. And like I said, I don't think anything should be done 100% of the time, just like I don't think that every at-bat should be the same for every hitter. I don't think every Aaron Judge at-bat should be the same. Mm-hmm. He shouldn't always be trying to hit a home run.
Right. Yeah.
There are times where he just needs to put the ball in play to win a game, right? Bottom of the ninth inning, runner on third. So there's nothing is 100%. Everything should be somewhat adaptable. So, yeah, I think that this technique works. I think it's smart. With nobody on base, you should be doing it all the time. I mean, all the time, as long as you're comfortable with it as a player. With men on base, it's situational. You know, if you got Victor Scott on first base, probably not a great idea. You need every edge you can get, and every tenth of a second is the difference between safe and out. Hell, it's probably more like, you know, 500ths of a second in that kind of a case. Runner on third base, I would prefer guys to not be in the one knee position, but it also depends on the pitcher who's out there. Is it a guy that when he misses small, or is it a guy like Hennessy Cabrera who might spike a ball 52 feet or throw a fastball, 98 mile an hour fastball up and away 5 feet high? I mean, like, all of it is situational. Yeah. All of it. But in general, that is a really good technique.
If the pitcher needs the low strike.
Yes.
With a runner on third, you might still do it.
Like, yes. And again, especially a guy you can trust.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things that comes up with, you know, the younger players, Derek, is college pitchers, professional pitchers, major league pitchers, when they miss, they don't miss by much usually. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a pitch that if it bounces, it's like at the plate or behind the plate. Mm-hmm. But the younger you go, the bigger the misses are, right? So as a younger catcher, you have to be able to account for bigger misses. And the older you get, the less you have to worry about that. So you have the ability to again, use that sliding scale. It's all about aptitude, who's pitching, who's catching, how old are you, how much experience do you have, what's the current situation, you know, what's the umpire doing?
Yeah.
You know, if you can steal low calls from a guy, do it. If the guy's not giving it to you anyway, well, maybe you shouldn't with men on base.
But yeah.
Again, generally speaking, there's a reason why this has exploded, and it's because it works for getting low pitches called strikes.
All right, last thing I wanted to ask you, and then we'll run away. And hopefully next week at the winter meetings, I'll be able to kind of get back in the host seat with my colleagues there in Nashville. Give me your thoughts on where things stand defensively for the Cardinals right now at catcher. Right now, Wilson Contreras is their starting catcher. You know, did he make strides? Did he make the strides they wanted to? Why not let Wilson be Wilson and adjust around him? I think it's a real fascinating thing that he'll have three new starters coming in and can start fresh with them without any of the nonsense from this past year.
Yeah,
I think that's a big thing. But where do things stand for in your view, the Contreras, Herrera, Páez? That what is that group? defensively robust enough? Are we going to see some swapping around there?
I don't know, man. I mean, you know, Herrera has always been viewed, and I'm not saying by the team, but by outside evaluators, as more ready bat-wise than defensively, right? Right. It's kind of always been the report on him. But it seemed like there was an improvement in that last year. Yeah, and I think there was some improvement on that, and the team wouldn't do what they did with Kisner if they didn't think that Herrera could handle a backup role from both offensive and defensive perspectives. But it's not an elite catching group. It's just, you know, we're so used to this being Yadier Molina. We all have to come to the realization it is not going to go back to that. Not anytime soon. It's not Mike Matheny. It's not Tom Pagnozzi. It's not Yadier Molina. It is not going to be like that. So, yeah, there are things that you have to accept. Now, that said, there's no reason why Contreras can't be better at blocking pitches. There's no reason why he can't be better at framing pitches. He should get better calling games, running games, the more he knows his guys. And I think, again, you're right, Derek. I think this is probably less of an issue with newer guys who have seen a range of catchers as opposed to guys that were used to Yadi. And that's what they were. That was the standard. Well, this is not that. These are guys that have been around the block a little bit. But I don't think there's anything unrealistic or unreasonable to say that Contreras can be better at blocking pitches. I don't think there's any reason to say he can't be better at framing the low ball. There are simple techniques that you can use to do those things. I mean, to me, it's akin to saying an infielder can't get better at making plays on ground balls. Of course you can. It's repetition. You can't all be Nolan Arenado, right? Just like we can't say Wilson needs to be Yadi. That's not the point. But everyone in the major leagues can be at least an average defender based on their physical abilities. Then the question is, do they want to? Are they willing to put in the extra time? Do they have a predisposition to not want to do a certain thing? I mean, how many times have we seen that, Derek, where, you know, guys don't want to do something because it makes them uncomfortable, and then that lack of comfort impacts other parts of their game, and they don't want to mess with it. So I understand all of that. There, you know, as Tony used to say, to LaRussa, men not machines. There are things that you can't just program them to do. But I don't think there's a reason why we should just say Wilson is what he is, and we just have to deal with that. I think there's there are areas where improvement can be expected through proper training and some work and some focus. But, you know, the other trade-off, Derek, is he is a phenomenal thrower. And that's more important now than it has been in the past. So he still has some defensive value. And I think he can get better at the other things. The question is, does he want to? Like, how badly does he want to? And who's going to teach it?
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes the person that the message is coming from matters as much as the message. And I'm not saying that that's a knock on anybody, but if that message is being delivered by Yadi, that's different than from somebody that's not Yadi.
Yeah. I mean, that's right? Part of their thinking. You know, to bring it full circle, it's not, shouldn't be lost on folks that bringing Gibson, Lynn, Gray to a group that already has Michaelis. That's four guys who know what they're doing when it comes to directing and guiding a game. Yep. They can lead the catcher.
Absolutely. All right. Speaking of leading, with your voice not doing what you want it to do all the time, it's been fun filling in for you as the quote unquote driver on the best podcast in baseball, which, by the way, is brought to you by Closets by Design. I'm Kevin Wheeler, the guest, even though
you know,
acting
what?
A bit Kevin, as the host.
You know, the Gould's always asking favors for you. You know, my son's got to work on this short film. Who does he call to star as the supervillain? Kevin.
Hey, well, Mr. I mean, Wheeler, look, that's going to help me in my movie career, too, because that's my jumping off point.
I think you did great. I think you did great. Really delivered the lines. you know, we saw your character change, which was that's a hard bit of acting to start in one direction and then have that momentary shift.
Look out, De Niro.
The evil. No, you did well. And then, of course, I need someone to pinch hit as the, like you said, the driver on BPIB. So thanks. Thank you very much. You know, I don't know what we'll ask you to do next, but I'm sure we'll come up with something.
Hey, I'm glad to, because, you know, for all these years, I've always asked you to come on my radio shows and you do. So, you know, that's what friends do, right?
It's my pleasure. And
like, you know, as buddies, we do things for each other. That's the way it works.
Yeah. Thanks.
Simple and easy. But it's been good doing it, man. We'll look forward to jumping on and joining you again. I'll look forward to getting you back on KMOX at some point here soon, too.
Look forward to it. Thank you so much, Kevin.